Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Anthony Edwards!
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for half off. Right now, you can read all of John Hollinger's preview pieces for half off.
Andrew,
that's crazy.
Andrew, he predicted the Thunder would win 13 games.
13? You want to know why?
Wow.
Subscribe. Go check it out. It was really something for Thunder fans to behold.
Yeah.
It was. So this week it's preview week. So you've heard many different previews this week, but this podcast is going to be dedicated to over-unders and particularly numbers from BetMGM. And teams that we feel confident are either going to hit their over or the under. Let's start with one from Al. My co-host, Alex Spears, as always, is here. Alex, give me a team that you feel confident is going to hit either the over or the under.
Okay. So I had a few strategies this year.
Okay.
Because my strategies in the past were like trying to think it through, you know, logically. And I feel like that never works for me. I always get like half of them right, half of them wrong. So this year, I looked back historically to try to get some clues, Andrew. And the first thing I noticed when I looked over all the over-unders was I was looking at the tops and the bottoms. And I feel like the teams at the very bottom, I felt like the over-unders were a little high. So for instance, Orlando is the lowest over-under on the board, 22.5 wins. Okay. So if you think they're going to go under, they'd have to win 22 wins. Now, how often does that happen, Andrew? How often is it that a team wins 22 or fewer games in a season? I will tell you, Andrew, because I went back two decades looking at every single team that lost that many games, or I should say won that few games. And on average, first of all, there's been one of those teams every single year. And on average, there's 2.5 of those teams every single year. In other words, I can feel confident going with my first pick, which is the Orlando under at 22.5. Now, I took into account Oklahoma City here as well. But for me, and you might, Oklahoma City might be one of yours. For me, the difference here is that OKC has SGA, who is like a well-established floor raiser. At least he was early last season when they were like 500 in February. Orlando does not have that. And Orlando's roster right now, super young, not a lot of shooting, a bunch of guys, as we discussed last week, who you just don't really know what they are yet. And that's great. Like, I think Orlando's doing absolutely the right thing. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm excited that Orlando is doing this. Yep. But like last year, their top four 3-point shooters, it was Terrence Ross was one of them. Great. He's still on the team.
Yeah.
It was Vooch, mm-hmm. Fournier, Aaron Gordon. Once you get beyond that, like, who is the next best shooter on this team? It's probably Gary Harris, who has taken more than 5 threes per game once in his career.
And an unreliable three-point shooter, he's proven to be
yes.
over the years.
And beyond that, now you're talking about, like, you know what? Mo Wagner had a pretty nice shooting year last year. Like, there is yeah. no shooting on this team. And Terrence Ross could be a guy that could potentially be moved. So you have all yeah. of these guys who I'm not sure how they fit together yet. Super young, first-year coach. They don't even necessarily want to win. So I feel pretty good, knowing the history, that it's very common for teams to go under 22.5. I'm starting out with the Magic under 22.5.
Yeah, I think that feels easy. They're just a mystery team, honestly. And when mystery teams are as young as they are, take the under. Like that's how it works. And young teams lose games, and that's why I think that it feels safe to pick the under for Orlando and OKC, just because they're going to be so young. I'm the oldest player on the Thunder this year. Is Mike Muscala, and he's 30. That's the oldest player. Derek Favors, also older. I think he is maybe like 2 weeks younger than Mike Muscala, but like, do you think that Derek Favors is going to be on the team in February?
Well, that's the thing. If you go through the players who are most likely to play big minutes on the Thunder, like the average age has to be like 22 or something. If that, it's probably yeah, like 21.
That might be high. That might be high because they're going to be playing multiple teenagers this season.
Right.
And you just don't win NBA basketball games. You just don't. My first is going to be the Brooklyn Nets. 56.5 is the line.
Uh-huh.
And I'm taking the over. I don't care.
Andrew, this
about
is one
the
of mine.
Kyrie Irving stuff, is it?
Yes.
I do not care that Kyrie Irving is out. What are they going to do without Kyrie Irving?
No.
Who
no.
cares? James Harden by himself on the Rockets just wins 50 games.
Easy.
Like, that's what he does. He has never played with a player in his prime the caliber of Kevin Durant. Now, obviously, they played together in Oklahoma City, but they weren't in their primes yet. They were like 22 and 23 years old when they were playing together in OKC. Now they know what they are. They're established. That duo should be the best duo in the NBA, period. The end. I know we have
yes,
LeBron James
agree.
And AD. That's fine. These are two like alpha guys. Any team would be happy to be building around either one of those guys right now. And they're on the same team. Sure, would it be nice to have Kyrie? Yeah, that would be nice. But they have enough in Brooklyn to make it work. So I'm not afraid of any of that stuff. I'd still even pick them to win the title if they remain healthy. Now, health is the biggest thing for them because they've got lots of guys on their team that you could worry about with regards to health, like Kevin Durant, one of them. Obviously, James Harden has been a guy that's been an Iron Man through the years but had struggled with injuries last year. So like, those are the biggest concerns. And then like some of the older guys that you're relying on have had some injuries throughout their career. Obviously, Blake Griffin and Paul Millsap, those are concerns. But if they can stay pretty healthy, like Joe Harris, great, great player for them. Bruce Brown proved to be a great rotation player for them. I'm interested in Cam Thomas. There's been a lot of Cam Thomas hype that I'm just not ready to buy into yet. For regular season stuff, but perhaps he can step in. Nick Claxton is good. This is a good team. I'm not concerned about the Kyrie absence just because they have too many good players otherwise. Now, playoffs may be another story, and then health may be a factor, but if they're relatively healthy, like give me the over all day just because these guys are just going to torch other teams.
And even considering health, last season, Brooklyn won 48 games. That was in a 72-game season. To be on pace to beat this 56.5 last year, they would have had to win 50 games last year. Like, they were already two games off, and that was with Harden playing less than 40 games for them, KD playing less than 40 games for them. So I completely agree with you that, like, the Kyrie thing is a red herring. Like, who cares? If Kyrie just wasn't on this team, was on another team, and we were just talking about a team that Kevin Durant and James Harden, like, no one would think twice. They'd be like, yes, that is obviously going to be the best team. Those are the two of the best five players in the league. And like everyone agrees that KD is number one player in the league. If you look at all like the preseason rankings, he's the number one guy everywhere you see all these different outlets. So that's, I think that's a lock. And the thing to support it is the same way I looked back the last 20 years for teams that won 22 or fewer games. I also looked how often is it that a team wins 57 or more games, because Brooklyn has the highest over-under in the league. And it's three per season. Three per season. So, like last year, it was the Jazz and the Suns. They yeah. won 57 or more games, or the equivalent. It's like 68.3% of your games. So I have full confidence that this isn't going to suddenly change. And so those over-unders at the top actually feel low to me. And I think Brooklyn is a great candidate. And my other candidate that goes along with that is the Milwaukee Bucks. I'm taking their over as well, because again, there's at least three teams per year that win more than 56 games. Milwaukee's over-under currently is 54.5. We know what happened last year. They had the great year 2 years ago. Then they came back last year, and they were fiddling around, Andrew. They were experimenting. Yeah. And that was the whole narrative that entire season. And then they won the championship and really gelled in those last four games in the finals. And it just feels like this team knows who they are now. They know what they want to do. Maybe there will be less experimentation because they figured it out. They do have some new guys to work in, but I'm really not worried about that. And I just think that that is way too low for a team like the Bucks. 54.5, that feels like a lock to me. So that would be my third one, because I'm with you on Brooklyn.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm anxious to see some of those teams. I think Milwaukee's just their pure confidence heading into the season after coming off the title win. And the way that Jrue Holiday looked after winning the NBA Finals in the Olympics, like he looked like one of the best players on the floor. So I would not bet against that team just showing up.
I feel way too confident about this one, I'm letting you know.
Okay.
It is the New York Knicks over 41.5.
Yeah.
Now, just right off the bat, like, how does that make you feel? Are they on your list?
No, I feel pretty good about them. I wouldn't ever lock them.
Why would you never lock them?
I don't know. It's hard to say if Julius Randle is going to do what he did again.
Okay.
Like, do you feel confident about that?
No, and I don't need to, because they are so much deeper than they were last year. They have so many more rotation NBA players than they did last season. Like, everyone's freaking out about Kemba Walker. Like, oh, is Kemba going to hold up? Honestly, who cares? Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, I saw him in preseason. He looks good enough. And behind him, they still have Derrick Rose, Emmanuel Quickly. Like, I think their guard rotation is fine. And by the way, Evan Fournier can take some of that playmaking duties as well. Last year, they won 41 games, which in an 82-game season, again, tied with the Hawks, so equivalent to about 47 wins. And now their over-under is way down at 41.5. Even if there is regression from Julius Randle, and it'd honestly be crazy if there wasn't some regression. If he really is this player going forward, that would be so impressive. Even if that happens, I still feel so much better about the rest of their roster. You factor in, like, the Tibbs factor, because, yes, some of the guys they brought in aren't exactly, like, the best defenders in the world with Kemba Walker and Fournier. But I just trust Tibbs there, so I'm not even worrying about that. I just feel like they can be so much more dynamic offensively. And the ask here is just so low. Like, you're asking them to be a 42-40 team. And this is a team that was very, very good in the regular season last year. And I don't know why they're getting slept on like this. I know, because there was some, I don't know if it was a tweet or something, but they were talking about asking which team was the flukiest last year. And like, all these people were bringing up the Knicks. It's like it was just a huge fluke. I understand individual components of that, why they would think the Julius Randle thing is fluky, but I don't see why, like, the rest of what happened with the Knicks is that fluky. Like, is it really that unbelievable that Tibbs was able to turn this team into a really good defense? It's what he's done his entire career. And so now you bring in these more offensive players, just so much more legitimate NBA depth on this team, and this is a lock for me. 42 wins, that's all they got to get. Is that big of a deal?
I don't know. I have a hard time trusting the Knicks just in general. Like, they need to prove it to me multiple years in a row before I believe in the Knicks, like, period.
I will also say that when you see, like, the 25 under 25 type of list, you know, like ranking the young players in the league, it always feels like RJ Barrett is lower than he should be. Like, he feels like one of the more underrated young prospects in this league. I mean, the stats he put up last year are kind of absurd.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you believe in the shooting from him? Like, he jumped, made a huge jump in his 3-point shooting, but he still doesn't. The volume could be more, but I don't know if I believe in the shooting. That's another thing that I'd be watching for if I were a Knicks fan.
Yeah,
if I
for
believe
sure.
in RJ Barrett's shooting.
Yeah. Maybe he's more like a 37% or 36% shooter. Like, I don't think he's going to tank all the way back down to 32%. And it just feels like him more than any other young player, everyone's looking for the reasons why he might drop off instead of, oh, what if there's another leap here for RJ Barrett? Yeah. It's only his third season.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, he is kind of strange in that way. No one really talks about him when you're talking about like the best up and coming players. Like, he's never a part of the discussion.
Right. And honestly, Andrew, maybe this is a factor of Jonathan Macri, who was on our show not too long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Started following him after that, and so I'm getting inundated with all this Knicks propaganda. Maybe it is like gotten into my brain somehow.
Yeah, and they had a lot of players last year that went into the season that you were like didn't feel great about, like Alec Burks, and like they acquired Derrick Rose and Julius Randle and Nerlens Noel. You're just kind of like, like I don't know what that is all squished together, you know? And it ended up being really good for them. I just can't bring myself to be uber confident about them.
You know who else is on the roster? Last year's Orlando Magic's minutes leader, Dwayne Bacon.
Yeah, that's a thing. I don't know if that's good, but that's a thing. It's something that's happening with them.
Let's see him try to do it 2 years in a row. Lead his team in minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. My next lock. Is the Denver Nuggets. I just think the Denver Nuggets are going to be still really good in the regular season. They have the MVP, a guy that no one talks about as the MVP for whatever reason. Like, he's somebody that's just so forgotten when it comes to season previews. I think like everybody just writes him off like, yeah, whatever. It's Jokic. But he was incredible last year. Really, really good for them. You get Aaron Gordon for the full season. I know Jamal Murray's absence is going to be huge for them. Well aware of that. He will return at some point this season, which will be very helpful. But they've got just a lot of steady guys on their team. I think Bones Highland will play off the bench for them. I really like him. And then the MPJ, I just think he's ready. I think he's ready to take the next step. So I think they're going to win a ton of regular season games. What will they be as a playoff team will be completely determined by Jamal Murray and what he's capable of. But I would lock an over for them just because I think that they're just going to feast on bad teams. I just think they're a team that is going to play together. They're going to play solid defense. And on just an average night, they're just going to kill you with their smarts.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of Matt Moore's over-under articles from the Action Network.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings that up a lot. Like, if you're looking at one of these good teams and you're wanting to take their over, them beating up on bad teams is super important because you have to bank so many wins to get to that point. And he was making that argument in favor of the Utah Jazz, who were 28-6 last year against below 500 teams. But the Nuggets were right there. They were 26-8 against teams below 500. So of those teams in that range, I understand the argument for the Nuggets. I almost feel like their over-under's a little high. Like, shouldn't we get a little more room? I think it's an accurate over-under. And I don't.
It is. It's a good one.
Yeah, I don't even blame you for taking the over, but I just feel like they should give us a little bit more room. Like, it doesn't seem like.
Right.
Like, would it be that different if Jamal Murray was playing? Like, how much higher would they really make it?
It's a good point. Like, well, maybe 50.5 or something like that if he was playing.
Yeah. So.
I don't know. I would still like hammer the over. I mean, if Murray was there, like, I'd hammer the over on like 50.5 or 51.5.
Sorry. I was looking at the wrong team. I thought their over under was 54.5.
Oh, no.
Oh, 47.5. Oh, okay.
48.
That's much more reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's why, yeah, if they were 54, the 47 and a half, like, feels like, okay, I think they can get to 50. But, yeah, there's no way I'd pick it the over if they're 54 and a half. There'd just be no way.
Okay, my last one, I brought it up last week. If I'm going to say that they're going to win 10 games over their over-under, I feel like I have to come back a week later and say,
come on, Al. Come on.
That they're going to win one more game than their over-under. So I'm taking the Cleveland Cavaliers over 26 and a half. They have to win 27 games. Now, before you start poo-pooing all over this, let me bring up a few things. First of all, they were bad last year. They won 22 games.
Yeah.
But prorated for 82 games, Andrew, that's 25 games. So they only have to win two more games than that. Doesn't seem too difficult.
Okay.
Second thing is they have been truly awful since LeBron left. Really, really bad. Last three seasons, 19 wins, 19 wins, 22 wins. Having a fourth season like that in a row is surprisingly rare in NBA history. So I went back to the merger, because there were some teams popping up in like the 50s and 40s in the BAA. I don't care about them. So
yeah,
I was just looking for teams that have won less than 31% of their games four consecutive seasons. There are only five teams in the NBA, only five franchises who have ever done that. Any guesses, Andrew? Any guesses?
Bobcats?
Not the Bobcats.
Sixers?
Yes, but not what you're thinking. It was not the Process Sixers. They only did it 3 years in a row. And this is kind of my point. There were a ton of teams who had three seasons in a row. Like, for example, the Clippers have never had four seasons in a row playing this poorly. The Clippers. Clippers have never done it. The only teams that have done it, Chicago after MJ left, which that's kind of a nice, whatever you would call that, parallel to what's going on with Cleveland right now. Minnesota has done it twice, which is amazing.
Yikes.
Hard to do. Philly did it back in the early 90s, 93 to 97. Phoenix is actually the most recent one, the last 4 years with Devin Booker, you know, prior to them breaking out. And then the really impressive one, Vancouver. Vancouver Grizzlies, 6 years in a row. The only team that's ever had one of these streaks longer than four seasons. Point of all this is saying, if Cleveland doesn't hit their over, like, there need to be significant changes. They would be one of the worst franchises in history to be able to do that. It's very hard to be this bad for so long. And I know
That's how the league works. I mean, that's how the league is designed to pull teams up.
Right.
To the middle.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it's designed to pull teams down from the top. Like, you're not... The Cavs are going to be a test case of, like, you just can't stay bad for that long. You're exactly right. Like, you just can't do it.
The league is hard.
Just designed in such a way. Yeah. The hardest thing to do is to stay away from the middle, right? Like, that's what all these teams are battling all the time. Like, unless you're the Pacers, where you're just like, yeah, just sit back and just stay in the middle. We're just cruising down the middle for eternity. You know, everybody else is battling, like trying to either, like you see like the Thunder and the Magic, like trying to like get away from the middle and go down. And then you see like the Warriors right now are battling to get out of the middle, you know, because they could end up being in the middle.
Yeah.
They've got to hit on these draft picks. They've got to do all these things. They're to sustain their success, to take the teams that they have back to the top. Like, they are battling that battle from the middle.
And looking at their roster, I mean, you know what it is. Like, listen, I don't feel like confident, even though I'm making this a lock. Like, I get all the arguments against the Cavs, but there were things last year. You know, everyone's talking about, oh, they lost Larry Nance. Larry Nance was a huge part of their team. He was also hurt for a majority of that season.
Yeah,
I have no idea what to expect from Kevin Love. Everyone's freaking out about Lauri Markkanen, but
nothing. You expect nothing. Expect That's what you should expect.
Wait, is this true? I'm looking at the Cavs roster. Okay, that was 2 years ago. I was like, Brandon Knight played on the Cavs last year? That is incredible.
I was going to say.
Anyways, everyone's freaking about Lauri Markkanen. But I really think if you look at their three big guys, all of them can play with each other. And in fact, the pairing that I probably feel the weirdest about is the starting lineup, at least offensively, with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. But like Jared Allen and Lauri Markkanen, that makes sense to me. Lauri Markkanen and Evan Mobley makes sense to me. So that I'm not really worried about. I've talked about their we've probably talked about the Cleveland guards more than any other players on this show. I feel like I've talked about them multiple times. I really like them.
Yeah.
Second year for Okoro. I just don't feel like it's that big of an ask for this team to win 27 games. I feel like they are good enough right now to do that.
Yeah, this is a big year for Garland. Really, really big year for Garland. Like, if he wants to get paid like a star, like, this is the year to break out. Like, he's got to do it. So, I'm not, I don't feel confident about it either, but you just have to be like, come on. Like, you have to get the over. Like, win 28 games. Like, you're not asking, you're right, you're not asking a lot from this team. Just let the league pull you to the middle, Cavs. Just let it happen.
Yeah, because, again, we're in year four of this.
Yeah.
Like, please. Come on.
Save us. Save us. Oh, man. A team that also needs saved, the Houston Rockets, covered by our guy Kelly Eco, is going to come on. We're going to talk Rockets as our team from the Wheel of Fandom this week.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'd like to welcome Kelly Eco to the podcast. Kelly covers the Houston Rockets for The Athletic. Kelly, before we get started, I just need to know, who has more swag in Houston right now? Is it you or Jalen Green?
Man, that's a good question. Well, I lost 50 pounds, so we might have to revisit.
I know. That's why I'm asking. Like, you're killing it right now. I
appreciate it, man. We might have to see opening night. We might have to do a little poll. Who's coming better? I don't know. But Jalen got swag. I think these young guys, you know, going from James Harden, Tucker, Russ to now, these guys, I think they got to keep the drip alive. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I love it. So in a recent article, you described Houston's team-building approach as not wanting to go full process in regards to Eric Gordon possibly starting over Jayshon Tate. We also saw them sign Daniel Tyson free agency, who has been the starting center in the preseason. So what are the team's goals for this season, and how big of a priority is it for Houston to land a top pick again this year, knowing their future obligations to OKC?
I think whenever you have a group as young as this, you know, there's so many moving parts in terms of development. You know, Jalen Green is going to be, you know, the most important thing. But to me, honestly, I think them developing Kevin Porter Jr. as a point guard is going to be more important than Jalen Green's overall development, if that makes sense. Just from a standpoint of you want your point guard to control the team for the next 5 or 10 years. You want somebody that's going to lead a group of men, you know, to victory. And you want someone that can help other guys tap into their own development. So I think the most important goal for the Rockets this season is to get those guys up to speed. You still have Jayshon Tate, who's a second-year player, but he's kind of older. You have Kenyon Martin Jr. You still want to develop Christian Wood as a real all-star caliber center. And the other guys on the fringe, you have Josh Christopher, you have Alperen Şengün, who's going to be a big piece for this team this season, Usman Garuba. There are a lot of moving parts for this young team, and I think because of where they are at the bottom of the Western Conference, development is key, and it's going to be more important than dubs and losses in the season. So the good thing from now until whenever the season's ending, you'll get to see that development. And it's actually a question I asked Coach Silas last night. I asked him, like, how do you chart this development? Because, you know, there are guys that will develop faster than others. There are guys that will grasp concepts better than other players. And he said, it's not really a numerical thing. Like, they won't say if player X shoots 35% from three, then, you know, there's improvement. They want to have it more as a conversation, a holistic approach. Mm-hmm. You know, bringing these guys, you know, together and having them able to learn NBA defenses, NBA schemes, how to set up in a half court, how to attack in transition, how to switch, how to drop. And I think it's going to be strength and numbers process that rather than, you know, just the normal wins and losses for the season.
You mentioned all the moving parts, and one area where it does seem like they're pretty set in stone is that backcourt of the future with Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green. How has that combo looked in the preseason so far, and what do you see as their main strengths and weaknesses as a backcourt pairing?
There have been flashes. You know, Kevin Porter is still learning how to be a point guard at this level, and he's also learning how to set guys up and where they want to be on the floor, having to play off of Jalen Green at times, knowing when to pick your spots, finding that balance that Stephen Sauce talked about between being aggressive and finding shots for others. There have been, you know, small spurts where you can see how it can be exciting. Both players are flashy. Both players have a knack for scoring all three levels. Both players have that unselfish vibe about them. I think where you'll see struggles this season is, like last night, we saw a good Toronto Raptors team defensively. They're long. They're physical. They're going to get in your face. And when you have to make those reads at the highest level at breakneck speed, sometimes there'll be bumps in the road. So I think whenever you play a team like Miami, a team like Toronto, a team like, you know, the Bucks that have long defenders that are smart, they're going to struggle. Where they'll excel is, you know, whenever they get up on these up and down races with teams, they can use their youth and speed to get up the floor and cause havoc. But, you know, I think overall the biggest challenge for this group, for Kevin and Jalen, is going to be having to make those reads, having to defend, you know, NBA guys, because those are some big dudes and these guys are, you know, pretty small compared to, you know, the Jrue Holidays of the world, the Jimmy Butlers, the Bradley Beals, the Russell Westbrooks. There's some big dudes in the Western Conference, mm-hmm. And NBA in general. So I think defensively they'll struggle a lot, but, you know, they're young. Kevin Porter is only 21. Jalen Green is 19. I don't think the coaching staff is expecting that much in that aspect this season. This is just the beginning of a rebuild. They want to set the floor for the years to come. But there have been flashes of them playing off each other. Jalen, you know, being a savvy scorer, even though he's still learning to pick his spots. Kevin Porter Jr. has shown some nice passes, some nice high pick and roll reads and stuff like that. So it's a growing process.
Yeah. So outside of Jalen Green, Houston drafted three more first-round picks with Şengün, Josh Christopher, Usman Garuba. How do you see those guys fitting into the rotation? Do you think any of them are a lock for rotation minutes altogether?
Yeah, I think Alperen Şengün is a lock for that 8-9 man rotation, if you want to call it right now. Like Silas's mm-hmm. favorite eight guys, he's one of the first guys off the bench, and Silas has been trying to see how he fits playing next to Christian Wood, how he fits playing next to, you know, Tyus, and if they want to go small, the coaching staff is really high on Şengün this year. They understand that he's played in a professional league overseas for a number of years, and that helps you come into the NBA where even though you can't really speak the language well, you still understand basketball. And mm-hmm. he's a savvy playmaker. He has a knack for finding the ball. Just even though he's frail, he's going to have to put some pounds of muscle on his frame. But he's a gifted passer. They're putting him in the high post, letting him have those reads by himself. You know, he's crafty around the basket, kind of like a Lewis Scola type, a Jokic type, Sabonis, if you want to put it in that category. And he's someone that just knows how to play winning basketball. It's going to be hard to gauge because the Rockets are going to lose a lot of games this year just being a young team. But I think AP is going to have a big role in whatever the Rockets want to do this year. Now, going to Josh Christopher, coming into the draft, and I said this before, people at the Combine – what stood out to me was his defense, for sure. Mm-hmm. Being able to communicate with other guys on the floor and be aggressive at the point of attack. Now, everyone knows he's a gamer. He's a gifted scorer. He can handle the ball. The Rockets have been using him more as a lead ball handler. He's more comfortable in that role as opposed to playing alongside of DJ Augustine in the second unit or Dante Exum. He's more comfortable being on the ball. That helps him because he's able to attack downhill. He's able to get into those spots between defenders and finish. Yeah, he's playing against preseason guys that might not play a lot of NBA minutes, but he's showing he can hang in this league. Originally, there was a plan to kind of maybe send him down to the G League to get him more reps and minutes because it is a crowded backcourt. There are a lot of guards in this roster, and getting him time and games in the G League makes sense. But I think he's somebody that the Rockets took a swing on because they understand the upside is crazy. He has the NBA body right now, 6'5", 215. He's a hell of a playmaker. So I think Josh Christopher, the ceiling for him is a bit higher than people think because of the environment he's in right now. Garuba is a defensive stalwart. He's as solid as I've seen for rookies in a long time. He knows exactly where to be, how to rotate, how to help, how to tag. He can switch. He's a good rim protector. Offensively, it's going to be a struggle because, you know, he's still developing that corner three shot. He's still developing his overall offensive skills that teams are going to force you to do, you know, playing in the NBA at the highest level. He's going to have to hit outside shots consistently, like at least 34%. So his development is kind of behind the others. But I do think that of the three rookies, if you want to rank their importance to the squad right now, it goes LP, Josh, and then Garuba.
Going back to Şengün, you know, in the pre-draft process, everyone really respected his offensive game, and he's already shown that both in the summer league and in preseason. The question was about his defense, where you sometimes get compared to guys like Enes Kanter. Do you feel like you've seen enough to feel like there is some upside there defensively for him, both in the summer league and in these preseason?
I think there is. He's been able to use his length at times to block some shots. He can rotate quicker than expected. The Rockets want to improve his side-to-side speed, so he's working on that. The weight is going to be a problem because he's kind of an undersized big, and he's going to go up against, you know, big, beefy guys. So that might be a problem finishing on the inside. But he's going to be playing against a lot of second units. You know, you got to think about it that way. He's going to be able to pick his spots and surprise some folks because he is pretty crafty. So I don't think they'll put him in too many disadvantageous positions. And that's why they signed Daniel Theis, to kind of handle those bigger guys. So LP can work on, you know, the other parts of his game. But I do think that people shouldn't be surprised if he's in the running for, you know, first team or rookie. I think he's definitely going to play enough to earn those accolades and stuff like that. So the Rockets have a good talent on their hands. There's a reason why prior to the draft, you saw so many mock drafts putting him top 10, top 12 pick, because he's a talented big man and you don't want to pass up on talent like that if you can help it. So I think he's in a good spot.
So it's been a few weeks since the news came out about the Rockets and John Wall mutually agreeing not to play him this season. Right. So rank these scenarios from most likely to least likely. Okay. John Wall is traded before the deadline. John Wall is bought out this season. Or John Wall is still on Houston's roster next summer.
I think the first in order would be John is still on Houston's roster next summer, I think. Hmm.
Okay.
Then you can go to the deadline and then a buyout. I think we've seen how the NBA operates, like a domino effect. You know, when something big happens, and the biggest things are the, you know, Ben Simmons and the Kyrie situation. I think once those things develop, if Ben Simmons finds a new home, if Philly doesn't get, you know, it sounds crazy, but, you know, crazier things have happened. You know, with there, John Wall is not a bad NBA player. He averaged 20-6, 20-7 on a terrible team last season. And he came off a two-year injury in which a lot of guys wouldn't even play basketball again. He's a tough guy. He's a leader. He's a savvy playmaker. He's someone that wants to win. And I think the money is bad because of the age and the injury history. It's a lot of money. That's a crap ton of money. But there are teams – it's not like there are no teams that can take him and he can impact winning right away. He can. It's just – you have that money is just crazy. So I think if you wait a year, then it becomes an expiring contract. Now it's more attractive to pursuing a deal. If you want to attach maybe a pick or two, I think you could get, I think that could be something possible. But I don't think the Rockets want to have a buyout because it doesn't help them at all. They're still going to have to pay him and they don't get anything back for him. And he's not a player that can not get you any assets back. So, I think if you were to rank those scenarios, number one would be him being on the roster a year from now, finding an easier trade then a trade before the deadline, and then buyout.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Victorinox, the makers of the original Swiss Army knife, have been a reliable companion for life's everyday challenges, mastering functionality, innovation, iconic design, and uncompromising quality with its products. The Victorinox Swiss Army knife provides you with all the things you don't think about until you need it: tweezers, a screwdriver, and even a corkscrew. With the Victorinox Swiss Army Knife, you can be prepared to master everyday life. You can find Victorinox Swiss Army Knives at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Well, Kelly, thank you so much for answering our questions. It is now time to play Andrew versus the Beat, our weekly quiz show where Andrew goes head-to-head a beat writer for an NBA team. This week, our guest, Kelly Eco, Houston Rockets beat writer for The Athletic. So, Kelly, how this works... I've come up with eight trivia questions all about the Houston Rockets. You will start us off by giving us me a number between 1 and 8. If you get the question right, you get 2 points. If you get it wrong, Andrew will have a chance to steal for 1. We'll go back and forth.
This is Squid Games?
Yes, this is just like Squid Game. It's the most dangerous podcast game. Okay, so to start us off, Kelly, give me a number between 1 and 8.
6.
Question number 6. Everyone knows that former Rockets star Tracy McGrady played for the Raptors, the Magic, and Houston, but T-Mac also played for 4 other NBA franchises during his career. Can you name the other 4 teams T-Mac played for? And I'm going to give you 1 point per correct answer.
The Spurs.
That is correct.
The Hawks.
That is correct.
Detroit.
That is correct. That's 3 points. You can get the full 4 if you can name the last team.
The Knicks.
That is correct. Andrew, you're already down 4. Zip.
Hey, you know me, player 456. That's me.
All right, Andrew.
Oh, no.
You are already in a hole, but it is your choice. Which number would you like?
Number 1.
Question number 1. Hakeem Olajuwon is one of only 4 players in NBA history to record a quadruple-double, joining Alvin Robertson, Nate Thurmond, and this guy, who is the last NBA player to record a quadruple-double, which he did in 1994.
Man, I don't know. Is this Shaq?
That's a guess, but it's incorrect. Kelly, you have a chance to steal for 1 point.
Say it again. Can you say the question again?
So this was the last NBA player to record a quadruple-double, which he did in 1994.
Was it Hakeem?
Well, Hakeem was actually one of the 4 players to do it, but he is not the most recent.
The most recent. And it happened in 1994?
Yes.
Can I get a hint?
No hints. You're up 4 points. You don't need any help.
You don't need any.
You're already destroying Andrew.
Not Dikembe. I got a pass. Damn, that's crazy.
It's okay. The correct answer, it was the Admiral, David Robinson.
I knew it was a big. That's crazy. That's nuts. All right.
Okay, cool. Kelly, it's back to you.
Give me 2.
Question number 2. This Houston Rocket player holds the NBA record for most 3-pointers made in a half, when he made 10 3-pointers in the second half of a game against the Memphis Grizzlies. Who is that player?
Aaron Brooks.
That is incorrect. Andrew, chance to steal for 1 point.
Oh!
I think Kelly realized who it was. But Andrew, do you know? This Houston Rocket, man, I don't 10 know three-pointers in one half of basketball.
Is this Aaron Gordon?
Aaron Gordon?
Not Aaron Gordon. Eric Gordon. I'm sorry. Eric Gordon. Durr.
No, it's neither of them. Kelly, did you think of who it was? You won't get any points for it, but
give me one. Wait, what year was this?
So I left out the year. I think the year was 2013 because I felt like that would have given it away.
13.
Yeah.
Chandler Parsons.
Yeah, it was Chandler Parsons.
Come on, Parsons. Yeah.
I remember that.
Crazy record. Okay, Andrew, it's your turn. You're down 4-0.
Yeah, Andrew getting his ass whooped.
8. Give me 8.
Question number 8. Andrew, James Harden holds the franchise record for most three-pointers made with 2,029 threes. The player with the second most three-pointers made in franchise history has 876. Name that player. So Harden's number one. This player is number two in made threes for the Rockets franchise.
Is this Ariza?
It is Trevor Ariza. And Andrew's on the board.
Okay.
4-2. All right, it's back to Kelly.
Wait, so if I get the answer before him, can I steal or I have to wait?
You have to wait. He gets first dibs.
All right, cool.
But now it is your question.
Mine?
Yeah.
5.
Question number 5. In 2002, Charles Barkley predicted that Yao Ming would not score more than 19 points in a game during his rookie season. When Yao did score 20 points in his 8th game, Barkley was forced to kiss the butt of this animal. Charles Barkley had to kiss the butt. That is correct for 2 points. Wow, nice pull. All right. Kelly is now back. He's maintained his lead now. Back to 6-2. Andrew.
Oh, boy. Let's go number 3.
Number 3. The first draft pick in Rockets franchise history was taken by the then San Diego Rockets with the 7th pick in the 1967 draft. The player that they drafted would go on to win 10 NBA championships spread across his time as a player, assistant coach, head coach, and executive in the league. Name that player. Drafted by the San Diego Rockets, he would go on to win 10 championships.
I'd probably have to be Pat Riley. I don't know that I know that, but it's probably Pat Riley.
That is correct, Andrew. For 2 points, it's now 6-4. Now, Kelly, you could put it out of reach here. We have 2 questions left, 4 and 7.
They're all worth the same points?
They are.
All right, give me 7.
Question number 7.
Then that was good, Andrew.
Actually, that's not true. This one's actually worth 3 points. Kelly has picked both of the questions worth more than 2 points. Very helpful when you do that. Okay, here we go. When James Harden was traded to Houston, he helped turn a middling Rockets team into a playoff team in his first season. Only 3 players on that roster played NBA minutes last season. Name them all, and I will give you 1 point per correct answer. So these are guys who were on the first James Harden team in Houston that also played NBA minutes last season.
Beverly wasn't there. Patrick Beverly?
That is one. That is correct.
Ariza was there, right? Trevor Ariza was there?
Trevor Ariza was not on the team, Andrew. You could make up serious ground here if you could name the other 2 players.
I think Tupat was on this team, Patrick Patterson.
That is correct.
Yes, he was.
And I think Marcus Morris was.
That is correct, ladies and gentlemen. Andrew is now down by only 1 point, headed into the final question. Andrew, if you get this correct, you will have won. But you have to get it correct to get the full 2 points. So here we go. Last question, Andrew. How many players in Houston Rockets franchise history have made an All-NBA first team? So you don't have to tell me who they are. You just have to give me a number. How many players in Houston Rockets franchise history have made an All-NBA first team?
I don't remember if this player did it or not. I'll say 4.
four. Just interested. Who do you think made it? Who are the names that you were thinking of?
I'm thinking Harden, Olajuwon, Yao Ming, and who was the other one that I thought of? I don't remember the
Mystery
other one.
Player
I think
X.
There's probably more. I think there's probably one more.
Well, Andrew, you probably should have stuck with three because the correct answer is three, which means Kelly has won. Andrew versus the Beat. The three names were James Harden, Hakeem, and Moses Malone. Yao never did it.
Yes,
sir.
Oh, that's what I was wondering. That's what I was like, I don't know if Yao ever did it. I can't remember if Yao ever did
wow,
it.
Wow, what a thrilling game of Andrew versus the Beat.
So close. That was a close one. Kelly, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it. Go follow Kelly Eco on Twitter. Go read everything Kelly does at The Athletic. Kelly, thanks so much,
man.
Man.
This was fun. But I won.
All right, Andrew is once again, time to spin the wheel of fandom. Each week we spin a digital wheel to see which team will be our favorite team for the next week. And this week is an important week, Andrew, because this is going to be the first week with real games coming up. And we have six teams remaining: Blazers, Hornets, Nuggets, Raptors, Spurs, and Pacers. I could go for some Raptors. I watched them against the Rockets on Monday night.
Raptors,
they're a fun team.
Yep.
Let's see what we get.
Give me some Hornets.
Spinning the wheel. Spinning the wheel. Our team next week on the Wheel of Fandom will be the Denver Nuggets.
Okay, I'm fine with that. We can do Denver Nuggets. I like that. That's a good team. Let's start off with a good team. First week of the regular season. That's exciting. Thanks so much for listening to the show. Be sure to subscribe to the Athletic NBA show if you're just listening to this show by itself. And just get ready. The Daily Ding is now a part of the Athletic NBA show, so be sure to listen to that. That is a nightly recap of all the games, so be sure to check that out. Hope you guys have a great, great weekend, and we will talk to you guys again next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.